CJSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia.
Beep 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 beep.
Transmitting from Zucchini Land, it's Steve, Jack, and Sam, the Zucchini Brothers, live at the clubhouse. Beep 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 beep.
Let's all get together, have a little fun. Let's all get together, dance under the sun. Shake your head and body round, everybody must get down. Shake your head and body round, everybody must get down.
Get down on the radio in the clubhouse with the Zucchini Brothers. Yeah, going to different places, doing different things. Yeah, with all of the friends.
The summer leaves wave in a peaceful breeze here in Zucchini Land, where reality steps aside, opening the door to one's imagination, where seasons change from week to week with the promise of new adventure, where hopes and dreams dance with the magic of music. It is here that we find the Zucchini Brothers, Jack, Steve, and Sam, with their dog Polly and their friend Susan, in the backyard of the clubhouse under the shade of an old oak tree. It's story day.
I could almost fall asleep out here.
Certainly is relaxing.
Well, I just hope I don't get any ants in my pants.
That's why we're sitting on this blanket, Steve.
Oh, yeah.
Here's a Mike Pinder story we can listen to. It's called The Gifts of Wally Dodd.
Story time. Story time. Story time. Story time.
In a little hut far from town lived an old grass cutter named Wally Dodd. Every morning, Wally Dodd cut and bundled tall wild grass. Every afternoon, he sold it as fodder in the marketplace. Each day, he earned 30 peso. 10 of the small coins went for food, 10 went for other needs, and 10 he saved in a clay pot under his bed. In this manner, Wally Dodd lived happily for many years. One evening, Wally Dodd dragged out the pot to see how much money it held. He was amazed to find that his coins had filled it to the brim. "What am I to do with all this money?" he said to himself. "I need nothing more than I have." Wally Dodd thought and thought. At last he had an idea. The next day, Wally Dodd loaded the money into a sack and carried it to a jeweler in the marketplace. He exchanged all his coins for a lovely gold bracelet. Then Wally Dodd visited the home of a traveling merchant. "Tell me," said Wally Dodd, "in all the world, who is the noblest lady?" "Without doubt," said the merchant, "it is the young queen of Khaistan. I often visit her palace just 3 days' journey to the east." "Do me a kindness," said Wally Dodd. "The next time you pass that way, give her this little bracelet with my compliments." The merchant was astonished, but he agreed to do what the ragged grass cutter asked. Soon after, the merchant found himself at the palace of the Queen of Khaistan. He presented the bracelet to her as a gift from Wally Dodd. "How lovely," she said, admiring the bracelet. "Your friend must accept a gift in return. Servants will load a camel with the finest silks." When the merchant arrived back home, he brought the silks to the hut of Wally Dodd. "Oh no," said the grass cutter. "This is worse than before. What am I to do with such finery?" "Perhaps," said the merchant, "you could give it to someone else." Wally Dodd thought for a moment. Tell me, he said, in all the world, who is the noblest man? That is simple, said the merchant. It is the young king of Nekubad. His palace, too, I often visit, just 3 days' journey to the west. Then do me another kindness, begged Walidad. On your next trip there, give him these silks with my compliments. The merchant was amused, but he agreed. On his next journey, he presented the silks to the king of Nekubad. A splendid gift, said the king, admiring the silks. In return, your friend must have 12 of my finest horses. So the merchant brought the king's horses to Walidad. This grows worse and worse, declared the old man. What could I do with 12 horses? But after a moment, Walidad said, I know who should have such a gift. I beg you, keep 2 horses for yourself and take the rest to the Queen of Khaistan. The merchant thought this was very funny, but he consented. On his next visit to the queen's palace, he gave her the horses. Now the queen was perplexed. She whispered to her prime minister, Why does this Walidad persist in sending gifts? I have never even heard of him. The prime minister said, Why don't you discourage him? Send him a gift so rich, he can never hope to match it. So in return for the 10 horses from Walidad, the queen sent back 20 mules loaded with silver. And the mules arrived back at the hut. Walidad groaned. What have I done to deserve this? Friends, spare an old man. Keep 2 mules and their silver for yourself and take the rest to the king of Nekubad. The merchant was getting uneasy, but he could not refuse such a generous offer. So not long after, he found himself presenting the silver-laden mules to the king of Nekubad. The king, too, was perplexed and asked his prime minister for advice. Perhaps this Walidad seeks to prove himself you're better, said the prime minister. Why not send him a gift he can never surpass? So the king sent back 20 camels, 20 horses with golden bridles and stirrups, 20 elephants with golden seats mounted on their backs, and 20 liveried servants to care for them all. When the merchant guided the servants and animals to Walidad's hut, the grass cutter was beside himself. Will bad fortune never end? Please, do not stop for a minute. Keep for yourself 2 of each animal and take the rest to the Queen of Khaistan. How can I go to her again? Protested the merchant. But Walidad pleaded so hard, the merchant consented to go just once more. This time, the queen was stunned by the magnificence of Walidad's gift. She turned again to her prime minister. Clearly, said the prime minister, the man wishes to marry you. Since his gifts are so fine, perhaps you should meet him. So the queen ordered a great caravan made ready, with countless horses, camels, and elephants. On the third day, the caravan made camp, and the queen sent the merchant ahead to tell Walidad of her coming. When Walidad heard the merchant's news, his head sank to his hands. Oh no, he moaned. Now I will be paid for all my foolishness. I have brought shame on myself, on you, and on the queen. What are we to do? I fear we can do nothing, said the merchant, and he headed back to the caravan. The next morning, Walidad rose before dawn. Goodbye, old hut, he said. I will never see you again. The old grass cutter started down the road. But he had not gone far when he heard a voice. "Where are you going, Wali Dad?" He turned and saw two radiant ladies. He knew at once they were peris from paradise. Wali Dad sank to his knees and cried, "I am a stupid old man. Let me go my way. I cannot face my shame." "No shame can come to such as you," said one of the peris. "Though your clothes are poor, in your heart you are a king." The peri touched him on the shoulder. To his amazement, he saw his rags turn to fine clothes. A jeweled turban sat on his head. His rusty scythe was now a polished cane. "Return, Wali Dad," said the other peri. "All is as it should be." Wali Dad looked behind him. Where his hut had stood, a splendid palace sparkled in the rising sun. In shock, he turned to the peris, but they had vanished. Wali Dad hurried back along the road. As he entered the palace, the guards gave a salute. Servants bowed to him, then rushed here and there, preparing for the visitors. Wali Dad wandered through the countless rooms, gaping at riches beyond his imagining. Suddenly, three servants ran up. "A caravan from the east," announced the first. "No," said the second, "a caravan from the west." "No," said the third, "caravans from both east and west." The bewildered Wali Dad rushed outside to see two caravans halt before the palace. Coming from the east was a queen in a jeweled litter. Coming from the west was a king on a fine horse. Wali Dad hurried to the queen. "My dear Wali Dad, we meet at last," said the queen of Khaistan. "But who is that magnificent king?" "I believe it is the king of Nekubad, your majesty," said Wali Dad. "Please excuse me for a moment." He rushed over to the king. "My dear Wali Dad, I had to meet the giver of such fine gifts," said the king of Nekubad. "But who is that splendid queen?" "The queen of Khaistan, your majesty," said Wali Dad with a smile. "Please come and meet her." And so the king of Nekubad met the queen of Khaistan, and the two fell instantly in love. A few days later, their marriage took place in the palace of Wali Dad, and the celebration went on for many days. At last, Wali Dad had said goodbye to all his guests. The very next morning, he rose before dawn, crept quietly from the palace, and started down the road. But he had not gone far when he heard a voice. "Where are you going, Wali Dad?" He turned and saw the two peris. Again he sank to his knees. "Did I not tell you I am a stupid old man? I should be glad for what I have received, but..." "Say no more," said the other peri. "You shall have your heart's desire." And she touched him again. So Wali Dad became once more a grass cutter, living happily in his hut for the rest of his days. And though he often thought warmly of his friends, the king and queen, he was careful never to send them another gift.
Here's some ice cold lemonade Mom made for us.
Ooh, oh, thanks, Jack. Oh, yeah.
We just heard a story from Mike Pinder called The Gifts of Wali Dad.
And we're all listening to the Zucchini Brothers live at the clubhouse.
And we're ready for our second story. It's from Catherine Conant, and it's called Exit 11.
Nobody in my family knows exactly why my grandfather Caristi and my grandpa Laziza came to Hope Lawn, New Jersey. My dad said he thought it was because of the railroads and the factories and the foundries. They knew it would be a place where they could get work. Mom said that wasn't it. Mom said for Nona and Grandma Caristi, when they finally got there, they said, "That's enough. I'm not dragging these kids one step further. You wanted to come to America? This is America. I'm not going any further." Then they fought for a while, Then they had a little something to eat, and then they stayed. And that's how we got there. If anybody ever asked me where I grew up, I always said, Exit 11, the New Jersey Turnpike. And then they knew exactly where that was. Except when my grandfathers came, the turnpike wasn't there. The turnpike and I were born in exactly the same year. My father said it just went to show that the state of New Jersey didn't know what they were getting into any more than he did. But while I stayed at Exit 11 and grew taller, the New Jersey Turnpike headed south towards Philadelphia. Every summer, when my window was open, I could lay in my bed at night and I could listen to the sound of the cars and the trucks rolling in the dark. Except for the car horns, it sounded like a seashell when I held it up against my ear. And I would wonder, where was everybody going in such a hurry so late at night? When my cousin Teresa came for a visit, she said, I lived in the ugliest place in the world. She said that if she had to live someplace where there were foundries and clay pits and factories, that she would have made her parents move. That only poor people lived where the air smelled like rotten eggs. Mom said, everybody had to grow up somewhere. And just because a person lived someplace nice didn't mean people were happy to see them. Except for my cousin Teresa's family, we all lived in just about the same place. I could walk to my cousin Rosalie's. I could walk to my Aunt Amelia's. I could see all of my cousins whenever I wanted. If I wanted to visit Nona and Grandpop and Uncle Camillo and Uncle Joe and Aunt Jay, I would just tell my mom. Then she would walk me down to the corner. And when the elephant-colored bus came and the doors opened, I would jump up on the steps, put my nickel in the glass money house, and she would say, Florida Grove Road, please, and the doors would close. Then she would go home and call Nona on the phone and tell her I was coming. As long as I was sitting up on the bus, I could look down on my whole neighborhood and see everything. There was Our Lady of Perpetual Sorrows Church and school. That's where I went. And next door was the convent with the big brick walls. And beyond that was the prune shop. My dad went there every morning to buy the New York Daily News. That's where I bought penny candy, even though the prune was always in a bad mood. Next door to her was Mr. Dambach's Rexall Drugstore. Mr. Dambach was a very lucky man because every day he read a special newspaper that was all about horses. When I got a pony, I was probably going to have to read it too. And at the very corner was Mr. Zichter's liquor store. Just about the time school started every year, he would fill the windows with six life-size cardboard statues of beautiful girls, the Rheingold girls. And then we could spend the fall voting for which one we wanted to be Miss Rheingold. They all looked like brides with long white gowns and arms full of roses. So every time my dad went to buy beer, I went along and voted. But I always voted for everybody so that nobody's feelings would get hurt. When I saw Nona standing in front of Mr. Tucci's store, that's when I got off the bus. And we held hands and crossed the street and walked up the driveway, past the shoe shop window where Grandpop was fixing shoes. I didn't go in there very often. After 11 children and 14 grandchildren, Grandpop had had just about as many kids as he could stand. But I always had to go in and say hello, and he would give me a piece of cat's paw shoe leather to draw on. On Sundays, when we all gathered and the shop was closed, we would clear off the long marble counter and lift the babies up onto the counter. With a grown-up on either side, we'd walk the babies back and forth until they learned how to walk. We all learned how to walk on the counter. Nona said she didn't know what she would have done without me. She's probably right. I turned the big hand crank on the wringer washing machine to squeeze the water out of the towels. I helped her make fresh pasta for supper. And then I read her the newspaper because she said she was so busy having kids she'd forgotten to learn how to read. Then we went outside and spread crumbs for the birds and picked tomatoes, and I checked on my apple tree. when Nonna had had grandchildren, with the first one she planted an apple tree, and planted one for every child as they came along. But by the time I came along, she was out of room. So my apple tree actually belonged to my cousin Victor, who was in the Marines. When he came back, I was going to have to give it back to him. At the end of the day, right before my dad came to pick me up on his way home from work, Nonna would fry onions and peppers in olive oil. And the late afternoon sun that would come through the window was the color of oil. And she said that wherever I went, no matter how old I got, I would always be her Kataranuts, her little Catherine. I thought the whole world looked like Exit 11. I thought the whole world looked like New Jersey. Until the day I got my library card. And suddenly, the world split open at the seams. And I discovered it looked like lots of other places. Sister Ursula had made us promise that we would only read good books that summer. But I figured the library didn't have any bad books, so I planned on reading everything. And when I opened the pages, I discovered there were places with rivers and mountains. There were canyons and fine New England villages with tall, cool white houses around perfect squares of green grass. There were people living on boats. There were people riding on horses through the mountains. There were places where the air smelled like air. That no matter where I looked, I couldn't find a single picture that looked like Hopelong, New Jersey. I went home and I said to my mom, "You're not going to believe what I found out." And I told her. She said, "Well, good for you. You just discovered that it's a very big world out there, and that one day you'll go out there and see it for yourself." "Then I can go?" "Well, not today. One day, when you're older, one day I'll bet you're going to get in a car and travel on the New Jersey Turnpike as far as you like, and then you can see it all for yourself." "Can I come home?" "Sure. You can always come home. Even if it's not to this house, any place you go where your family is, you'll be home." And she was right. She was right because I went out into the world just like everybody does, and I saw cool green New England villages and hot beaches, cities with tall buildings and mountains and canyons. But when I think about the place where I always felt the safest and the most beloved, I think of clay mines and railroads and highway noise, because everybody has to grow up somewhere, even if that house is in the shadow of the New Jersey Turnpike. Exit 11.
Last story we heard was from Catherine Conant.
I'm getting hungry.
Oh, clubhouse phone.
I got it.
Hello, Zucchini Brothers Clubhouse. Sam speaking.
Hello there. In my opinion, it's a beautiful day. What's your opinion?
Oh, absolutely, sir, it is. Guys, it's the opinionated man.
In my opinion, the sun is responsible for this weather. Mm. And the sun's almost like a person. Mm. Someone we need to spend more time with. Do you agree?
Oh, sure, I love the sun.
Well, in my opinion, we should celebrate the sun with a song.
Got one right here from Dan Zanes.
With my friends, I'll spend the evening and never think of leaving until someone insists I've got to go. Well, I'm a night owl, yes, it's true, but the sleeping that I do is rewarded by another friend I know. Sunny old sun, jumping through the window, day has begun, and you're all over. Song.
sunny old sun. You smile on the clouds, you're giving them their hours. Clouds are allowed, they're just passing by. Another day is ending, you'll go over the sea, over deserts and snow. We'll tell the rest of the world that I said hello. Well, we all said hello. And you can find us in a park serene, where every day is just an endless dream. All my friends and I run with the sunny old.
We'd like to say hello to you if you listen to us on stations like KSHI in SUNY New Mexico.
Hello!
If you'd like any information about the Zucchini Brothers, our concerts, our products, or anything you've heard on this show, or just to say hello, you can always go to www.zucchinibrothers.com. That's one word, and it's spelled Z-U-C-C-H-I-N-I-B-R-O-T-H-E-R-S. Keep those emails coming and look for show number
1317.
And click on the fun stuff icon for Susan's garlic greens pesto recipe.
The Zucchini Brothers Live at the Clubhouse is produced, recorded, and edited by Sam Zucchini, and written by Jack Zucchini, Susan Meyer, and Sam Zucchini. The Clubhouse music librarian is Steve Zucchini. This show is a presentation of Zucchini Productions.
Let's sing it.
Sweaters and cheese. Sweaters and cheese. Sweaters and cheese and fudge.
I love sunny days.
This young northern flicker is calling from the ground. Sound like trouble? Well, just because a young bird is on the ground doesn't necessarily mean it's sick or injured. At this time of year, juvenile northern flickers are leaving their nests. They fledge when they're 3 or 4 weeks old and almost as big as their parents, 11 or 12 inches long. Although you may picture a woodpecker high on a tree trunk, northern flickers, young and old, actually forage mostly on the ground. So this young flicker, just out of its nest, is poking around in the dirt and leaf litter, looking for ants and other insects. It makes test flights and, day by day, reaches higher and higher into the trees. But you'll still see it regularly,